Good morning, everyone. Such a pleasure to be back at Midrash Yom Rishon. My third time here, so I guess it's a chazaka. And I was very excited when I was asked to speak this week because of the Parshiyot HaShavua this week and the coming weeks. I really am very, very excited about. I love Sefer Shmot, and I decided that I would like to talk about the figure of Moshe Rabbeinu. So everyone hopefully will come out with some insights, even though it's a topic that people have all learned before. And in addition, you'll get to have a Dvar Torah for your Shabbat table, hopefully this coming week. So in this day and age, when we have such difficulty finding leaders who are moral and who put their values and their people first on their list of priorities, and of course I'm not going to mention any names, it's especially inspirational looking at Moshe to see what real leadership is meant to be. And of course, this week is an inauguration week as well, so it's an interesting perspective on the idea of leadership could also be relevant. Though obviously it would be impossible to survey all of Moshe's life in such a short amount of time, especially due to our delayed time that we're starting at the moment. Because Moshe Rabbeinu's life is perhaps the most documented life in Tanakh. It's of any leader in Tanakh. Its documentation spans almost the entire Torah. Right? Moshe's life had so many facets. Right? He was a prince, he was a shepherd, a politician, a lawgiver, a teacher, a judge, and of course a Navi, a prophet, who served as an intermediary between Hashem and the Am Yisrael. What I'd like to focus on today is a specific aspect of Moshe's leadership, and that is his relationship with those he led, Bnei Israel. We all know that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to be chosen as a leader that would help redeem Am Yisrael. Right? When Hashem appeared to him the first time, from within the fire of the sneh, the burning bush, he tried with all his might to get out of the job. And he gave four different reasons, which we'll review right now in the psukim on your handouts. The first one was, we'll read the Hebrew and then we'll translate. Vayomer Moshe el Elohim, Mi anochi ki elech el Paro, v'chi yotzi et Bnei Yisrael mimitzrayim. Who am I that I shall go to Paro and take Bnei Yisrael out of Egypt? Well, here we see Moshe being humble, right? He's saying, I'm not important enough, and why are you choosing me if there's a people who are better than me for this job? The second one is in the second source, in Shmot, Dalid, Aleph, Yud, and Yud Gimel. Vaya'an Moshe, the first pasuk here is Aleph. Vaya'an Moshe vayomel, v'hen lo ya'aminu li, v'lo yishma'u b'koli, ki yomru lo nira elecha Hashem. Right, Moshe is talking in this, not about his own shortcomings, but about the people that he's about to lead. Right, he's saying, they're not going to believe me, and they're going to say that Hashem didn't appear to you. Right, we can obviously understand this, especially since Moshe grew up in Paro's palace, he was removed from the people, wasn't a situation where he would have received the tradition and would have been educated the way that they were educated. How were they to believe Moshe that Hashem actually spoke to him, a stranger? The third one is the one that's most famous, which is in Pasuk Yud, in the same source, number 2. Vayomer Moshe el Adonai, Bi Adonai, lo ish dvarim anochi, gam mitmol, gam mishilshom, gam me'az daberkha el avdecha, ki chvad be uchvad lashon anochi. Right, Moshe says, I'm not a man of words, I've never been a man of words, and I have a heavy mouth and a heavy tongue. So the whole the idea of Moshe not being a man of words is also his own limitation that's going to prevent him from becoming a leader. At last, when Moshe sees that he's failing and Hashem is still insisting that he be the leader to go and take Bnei Israel out of Egypt, he has one last try, and that is at the end of source number 2 in the last pasuk, Vayomer bi Adonai, shnach na biyad tishlach. Basically, he's saying, Hashem, just send somebody else. Please don't send me. So which of these was the real reason, right? Because when a person gives four different excuses, sometimes some of them are real, some of them are genuine, some of them might just be an excuse. Which was the real deterrence, right? Did Moshe really feel worthy of the mission? Or was he just being humble? Did his refusal stem from possibly the fear of facing his father, his adopted grandfather, Paro? Or was the reason for his reluctance possibly the attitude of the people, the attitude that he was going to face from Bnei Israel? V'hein lo ya'aminu li, and they will not believe me. So to answer these questions, we need to backtrack a little. How did Moshe end up in Midian, shepherding Yitro's flocks? After years of a sheltered childhood in the palace of Paro, the Torah tells us that Moshe grew up and went out to see his brothers. In Pasuk, in the third source over here, in Pelek Bet Pasuk Yud Aleph, tells us about Moshe's coming of age. Vayhi bayamim ahem, vayigdal Moshe, vayetze el echav, vayar besivlotam, vayar ish mitzri, make ish ivri me'echav. And it was in those days that Moshe grew, and he went out to his brothers, and he saw their suffering, and he saw the Egyptian man beating the Hebrew man. So Moshe grew up, and he went to his brothers. Right, so the obvious question here would be, how did he know they were his brothers? Right? If he grew up as an Egyptian prince, assuming he was a very, very small child when his mother finished nursing him, then how would he actually have this kind of identification to go out and speak and help out his brothers? So it seems like even though Moshe had been separated from the Jewish people for many years, he'd still had his identification with the Jewish people had not been cut off. According to the Ramban, the Israelites themselves told Moshe that he was one of them. Right? It's really, those of you who've seen Disney, the Pixar movie, The Prince of Egypt, very interesting how some of the, even though there's criticism that it doesn't really follow the Pesukim, there are some things that do, and I think that this was one of the themes that was included, that the Jewish people were the ones who told Moshe that he was one of them. Moshe didn't know, another possibility is Moshe didn't know that he was an Israelite. He wasn't aware of his heritage, but he had an inner sense of morality that he inherited from his family and from his blood. And his inner sense of morality couldn't let him stay cushioned in the palace and in all of the luxuries when his nation was enslaving an entire people. It's also a possibility that Moshe had some kind of inner psychological urge to go, like an adopted child has, to go look for their natural family. But I think the idea of Moshe having that inner sense of morality strikes me as true. We see that Moshe attempted to save people three times. Right? Nechama Leibowitz elaborates on this in her article on this Parsha, Parsha Shmot. She mentions that it's very interesting to see that he saves the Jew from the Egyptian taskmaster, saves the Jew from his fellow Jew afterwards, tries to save the Jew from his fellow Jew, and then he saves Yitro's daughters from the people, the Midianite shepherds. Right? So she comments that each of these times reveals a different aspect. Right? He's saving a Jew from a non-Jew, then a Jew from a Jew, and then saving a non-Jew from a non-Jew. So this shows that Moshe's sense of ethics and morality wasn't limited to his own people, in any specific group, race, or creed, or nation, but to his inner sense of justice and not being able to tolerate any kind of human suffering and torture. His first encounter, the rescue of the Hebrew from his taskmaster, was indeed a noble act which really rectified an unjust situation. However, of the three episodes, I think the second episode must have been the biggest shock to Moshe. Right? Coming up to these two Jewish people, two Hebrews, and saying, why are you, right, let's read the pasuk inside. It's source number 3. And we're going to just go backtrack a little bit and read pasuk Yudbet first so we don't skip. Right after he saw the Egyptian taskmaster beating the Hebrew, he went and looked. And when he saw there was no one there, he beat the Egyptian and he buried him. The second day he went out and there were two... Oopsie. Karen? One of them fell down. One of the recording devices just fell down. Thank you. Then the second day he went out and there were two Hebrews that were fighting and he said to the Rasha, why are you beating your fellow man? Vayomel misamcha le'ish salva shofet aleinu. And he said, who put you as a minister and a judge upon us? Halehogeni ata omer kasher haragta et ha-mitzri? Are you going to kill me just like you killed the Egyptian? Vayira Moshe vayomar achen oda adavar. Moshe was fearful, and he said, now it has been discovered. So this person, this Jewish person, has, it's not only the chutzpah of coming, a person who's trying to help, why are you getting involved, but this is Moshe, who is the prince of Egypt. He's the son, the grandson of king of Egypt. He is basically someone that you don't talk back to, and he's probably well known who he was. How does this person feel that he can go and say to him, who made you our ruler and our judge, right? Nisamcha le'ish tarvish ofet. I mean, that's who he is. He's the minister and he's the judge, right? So it's possible to look at it that the harsh response of the Hebrews shocked Moshe into reality. These people, these slaves, are very embittered and downtrodden, and they're a desperate nation. It just seems like they had nothing to lose. If this is a representative, this person speaking to Moshe is a representative of the Jewish people and their state, their of mind at that time, it really seems, you know, that this would really be a turnoff for Moshe, saying, who are these people and why should I help them? Right? These are people who have no sense of respect and no sense of authority. Rashi quotes the words of Midrash Rabbah, and let's take a look at this in source 4. Describes Moshe's despair when hearing the evil Ivri's retort. And it says, Vayira Moshe, kifshuto. According to the Pshat, it means that Moshe was just fearful, because obviously the act of the murder of the Egyptian, the killing of the Egyptian, was known. But there's another interpretation, a Midrashic interpretation, which is very well known. Umidrasho da'aglo al shara'a b'Yisrael resha'im bilturim. He was very afraid and he was worried because he saw these people, these evil people, that were speaking badly in Bnei Yisrael. Amar me'ata shema einam ru'uyim lehiga'el. You know what? I see that maybe they're not deserving of redemption. They're not deserving of help. And then if you continue to the next part of the pasuk in Rashi's interpretation, achen nilda hadavar kemashma'o. According to the pshat, Moshe is just worried that his killing of the Egyptian was discovered. But according to the Midrash, umidrasho nodali hadavar shahiti tamea alav. Now I know what I was wondering, or what I was surprised about. Machatu Yisrael mikol shivim umot liyot nirdim ba'avodat perech. Now I understand what I was wondering before, why the Jewish people, of all people in the world, were singled out for this terrible slavery. Now I see that they are deserving of this. Rav Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg, in his commentary Haktav HaKabbalah, which is quoted by Dr. Bryna Levy in her article in the book Torah of the Mothers. By the way, if you took a look at that book, there's a wealth of articles about Moshe Rabbeinu specifically. And he explains the first episode of saving the Jew from the Egyptian in a similar vein. It says, Vayifan kovacho vayal ki ein ish. Right? He looked here and there, and he saw there was no one there. Obviously, the pshat means he didn't see anyone standing there. But according to the drash, vayar ki ein ish. An ish is referring to here as a person of a mensch, right? A person of good midot, a person who cared. There was not even any of the fellow Jews, any of the friends of the person who was being beaten who would come and help him. Obviously, in that kind of situation, you really can't judge a person, right? Because obviously, if any of the Jewish people are going to help this other person, they're under tremendous danger, right? They're obviously going to be punished very severely. But somehow, there's this idea that there should have been somebody to stand up, and that there's something about the mentality at this point of Bnei Israel as slaves that is making them an immoral people, a people who is lacking of courage and of the energy to get involved and to help others. So when Moshe hears these terrible, insulting, arrogant words out of the mouths of the Jewish person, this was the last straw. He couldn't see himself anymore as the possible redeemer or helper I don't think he even saw himself as part of this nation anymore, as part of his brothers, as part of the Jewish people. He couldn't relate to them. Obviously, his upbringing in a palace, an upbringing having a very, very strong sense of what it is to be proper, also contributed to it. But it's possible that this encounter specifically made him leave Egypt not only because of the danger of being killed for the fact that he killed the Egyptian, but also because of this disgust with the Jewish people. Moshe had rejected the values of his upbringing in order to go and help, and he was rejected. He had nowhere to go. So he found solace in Yitro's home and his new life with his wife, Zipporah, and his children, and his new shepherding career. Many years later, the age of 80, Moshe found himself being asked by Hashem to be the messenger to redeem Bnei Israel. So what could have stood out in his mind at that moment? Possibly that last encounter that he had had with a Jewish person, and that was that those chutzpahdik people who were saying, "Who are you? And go away and stop helping us." So the Midrash discusses the first refusal of Moshe when he says, "Mi anochi ki ilech al Paro?" Who am I that I should go to Paro? Not as a statement of humility, but a refusal that is based on Bnei Israel's attitude. Let's take a look here at source number 5, Shemot Rabbah. Dava acher mi anochi. There are a few different interpretations, midrashic interpretations of this verse, mi anochi, because it's obviously, it's very open to a lot of associations, right? For instance, Yaakov used the word anochi, so it's supposed to remind you of Yaakov. We're not going to go into all of the interpretations right now. Those who are more interested in looking into this can take a look at Simi Peter's book, Learning to Read Midrash, which I highly recommend, and which some of the ideas that I'm presenting come from. Dava acher mi anochi. אמר לפניו, ריבונו של עולם, איך אני יכול להיכנס למקום ליסטים ולמקום הורגי נפשות? So the first objection here is, how can I go and face the danger? Right? What's going to happen to me if I go into Paro's palace? Even possibly the Egyptian nation is perceived here to be a very corrupt place, where there's the law, there's no reign of law, and Moshe is afraid for his life. But then, it says, "Hevi mi anochi ki elech el Paro v'gomer, v'chi otzi et bnei Yisrael." The emphasis is more on who am I to take out bnei Yisrael? Ma zchut yesh biyadam she'uchal lehotziem? What merit do they have that I can be would be able to take them out? So this is expressing the idea that we saw before that Moshe doesn't believe that his people are deserving of Hashem's redemption. But the end of the pasuk, when Hashem talks to Moshe and says, "No, you should go, and don't worry," what is it seems like a strange thing that Hashem is saying to Moshe. He says to him, if we look back in source 1, Perek Gimel Pasuk Yud Bet, it's a kind of strange answer because Moshe says that who am I that I should take Bnei Israel out of Egypt? And what's the answer? Vayomer ki eheye imach. I will be with you. That's good. You know, Hashem is going to say, "Don't worry, I will be with you." This is the sign that I have sent you. When you go out of Egypt, when you take the people out of Egypt, you will worship Hashem on this mountain. The mountain that he's referring to is Har HaElokim, Choreva, which is where Moshe was standing at the time. And we know from other Sfarim that Chorev is Sinai, Har Sinai. Moshe was in the desert, and he apparently had wandered his way from Midian to the location of Har Sinai. So why is Hashem saying that the sign that I sent you will be that in the future you will take them to this mountain, and you will be here, and you will worship me here? That's not a sign, because the Bnei Israel aren't going to see it happen until it actually many years after, a while after they get out of Egypt, right? He can't go to Bnei Israel now and say, "Okay, this is the sign that Hashem sent me. You're going to worship God on a certain mountain in a couple of months." I mean, that's not a sign. What you can understand from this, and from the Midrash, and this is Simi Peter's idea, that this is actually the answer to Moshe and his doubts about Bnei Israel's potential. Right, Moshe is saying these people are terrible, they're incorrigible, they're so despicable, and they aren't deserving of any kind of help from you, Hashem. Hashem is saying, you know what, that's right now. But in the future, their potential, they have a lot of potential, and they will become a moral, helping, caring nation. As long as they get my mitzvah, right? Just have to be a little patient and see that hopefully while I guide them through the desert, while I give them the Torah, that is going to make them into what they're supposed to be. And that will educate them, and that will lead them to the point where they're supposed to go. And the Midrash explains, if we continue in source 5, from where we stopped before, it says, in the last line, it says, "Uma she'amarta be'ezes chut otziem mi'mitzrayim,
when
And the merit of the Torah that they will receive from you on this mountain, they are going to go out. So you could say, well, it's just a freebie. But no, it seems like it's something that has to do with the potential of Bnei Israel, that once they receive the Torah, it's okay. They'll be okay. And they won't be the way they are now. And I think Hashem is telling Moshe something that will be essential for his career as a leader, right? Because you have to see the potential and you have to have a vision for what's going to be. If you look at the way the nation is right now, you're going to sink into the mud and you're not going to get anywhere. I'll accept questions a little later, okay? It's true that right now the people are in the lowest moral and spiritual state. We know the Midrash about the 49, right? Memtet Sharei Tum'ah, the levels of impurity. They're incapable of helping each other or accepting authority. But the day will come where will be capable of creating a society and a country based on ethical, moral, and spiritual values that Moshe, will give them and teach them. The mitzvah will enable them to reach that potential. Maybe not in Moshe's lifetime. It will take many, many years, maybe decades, maybe even centuries. But the values, these values that Hashem will be giving us, will turn the nation around. So the message was one of vision of the potential of Bnei Israel. And it seems that Moshe did get the message. Moshe rose to the challenge and became not only a great leader, but the greatest leader Am Yisrael ever had, or would ever have. His patience with the people of Israel was beyond human. Bnei Israel's behavior in the Midbar, in the desert, was, as a rule, atrocious. As we know, anyone who's read Sefer Bamidbar could see. And their complaints, accusations, and rebellions didn't cease throughout Moshe's entire life. Anyone in Moshe's place would have given up, and Moshe actually did have a meltdown at one point, right, at the time when Bnei Israel asked for the meat, and Bamidbar Perek Yudal of Parshat Halot, Moshe basically throws in the towel and says, Hashem, just kill me because I can't do this anymore. But it does appear that Moshe did stick with his people, and he advocated tirelessly on their behalf each time it angered Hashem. And we're going to see this with a few examples that I'm going to give from the Midrashim and the Psukim. Why did Moshe do this? Why did he do this? Because it appears that Hashem opened his eyes to the terrible spiritual situation that the people were in. And I think he began to understand them, to have compassion for them, and to have mercy for them, maybe even identify with them. They were downtrodden slaves who desperately needed not only physical sustenance, but guidance and patience. Before I start the next section, was there a question? Or, you know what, yeah. Right. That's a good question. There are many. I'm sorry. I'm just gonna preempt you. It's true. There are. In Rashi, if you take a look, he quotes several midrashim that rebuke Moshe, that criticize Moshe for speaking this way about Bnei Israel. And you know, there were different ideas about the punishments that he received. Right. One of the signs was Sarat. Right. One of the signs to Paro was that he received. He had leprosy on his hands after he brought it out of his robe, and that was considered a symbolic, right, punishment. You didn't do the right thing by speaking badly about Bnei Israel. There are other ideas about why later on he didn't go into the land of Eretz Israel that were connected to that as well. But it's understandable. You know, it's also understandable why Moshe reacted this way. So Moshe cries out. I'm going to just go through a couple of examples of Moshe being the advocate, right? I called this class From Reluctant Leader to Impassioned Advocate. Moshe is an advocate of Bnei Israel. So one of the first time was right when he went to Paro, and Paro, instead of freeing them, decided to tighten the clamp, right, and say, no, I'm not going to give them, you shouldn't even give them the straw for building the, right, for making the buildings. And Moshe says, Lama hara'ota la'am hazeh, lama hazeh shlachtani. Hashem, why did you make it worse for the people? And this is also could be seen as a very big chutzpah. How could Moshe initiate that kind of dialogue with Hashem, that kind of complaint against Hashem? You have made it bad for these people. Moshe's devotion extended even to Bnei Israel's most basic complaints. When Bnei Israel complains, it's very interesting to note, also in this book that I mentioned to you, Torah of the Mothers, is an article by someone named Jane Falk, who's a language expert. And she noticed that many of the requests of Bnei Israel throughout the time in Egypt, in the desert, after they were redeemed from Egypt, their complaints were phrased as rhetorical questions. Examples. got a couple of them over here in source number 6 in Shmot Yudalid Pasuk Yud. This is in the situation where Bnei Yisrael are coming close to Yam Suf, right? They're coming to the Reed Sea, and they see that Mitzrayim, all the Egyptians are running after them. They don't know how they're going to get out of this. They're really worried. And in Pasuk Yud Aleph, Havayomru El Moshe, Hamibli Ein Kvarim VeMitzrayim LeKachtanu LaMut BaMidbar. Are there no? And the people said to Moshe, "Are there no graves in desert in Mitzrayim that you took us out to die in the desert?" What have you done to us to take us out of Egypt? Another complaint. In Pasuk, in Perek Yudalid, did I bring this one down? There's another one, continuation, in Pasuk Yudbet. Halo zeh hadavar asher dibarnu elecha b'mitzrayim lemor. Chadal mimenu, v'na'avda et mitzrayim. Ki tov lanu avod et mitzrayim, mimuteinu b'midbar. Isn't this what we said to you in Egypt? We said, let us alone and let us worship and let us work for Egypt, because it's better to work for Egypt than to die in the desert. These are three rhetorical questions that obviously, you know, Moshe's not going to say, yes, I did take you to die in the desert. Well, yes, actually there are more graves in the desert than there are in Egypt. They're asking something that can't be answered. We have other examples in other places. For instance, in source number 7, in Mara, where Bnei Israel came to the first place, their first station, and they didn't have water. What do they say? If we read the second pasuk, Kaf Dalid, Vayilanu ha'am al Moshe lemo, ma nishte? The people complained to Moshe and said, what should we drink? Again, there's no answer to that question. What was he supposed to say? Nothing? I mean, there's no water. Another question, in another situation, I didn't bring this all down, but when it comes to the man, right, when Hashem sends the man, that's also there in Parshat B'Shalach, in Shmot, they say, manhu, what is this? Lama hebeta otanu lehamitenu b'amidbar, they repeat again their statement, why did you bring us to die here? And in Bamidbar, in the section where they're asking for meat, it's, would we had meat to eat? Right, me tain lanu basar. So all these times, it's really interesting that they're asking sort of rhetorical questions. Why don't they come and say, Moshe, give us water. Moshe, give us food. Moshe, make a miracle so that we can cross the sea, or something like that. These are people that don't know how to communicate with their leader. These are people who have been slaves. They were never in a position to ever be able to state what their needs were. They were just told what to do to work. And that was what they were used to. They weren't accustomed to demanding or asking for anything. Again, you could construe it as a challenge to his leadership, but Moshe doesn't seem to construe it that way. When we see from his responses, well, first let me just discuss a little bit more. The people are not accustomed to asking. It's like a child who doesn't know, who has needs, but doesn't know how to request it. Right, they're kvetching instead of explaining and expressing their needs and requests. And their initial reaction is panic. Right? What are we going to drink? What are we going to eat? But Moshe somehow doesn't construe it as a rebellion. Moshe is very, very patient in a way. He answers them in a very understanding way. He doesn't answer them literally. He knows that the questions are rhetoric. At the Sea of Reeds, he says, let's look at the Pesukim here. We'll go back to source 6 in Pasuk. Yud Gimel, after the triple rhetorical question, Nesa really being very, very, very chutzpahdik and direct with Moshe and accusing him of taking them to die, what does Moshe say? Vayomer Moshe el ha'am, al tirau. Moshe said to the people, do not be afraid. Hityatzvu ureu et yeshuat Hashem. Wait and stand here and you will see the redemption of God. He's reassuring them. He's telling them, basically, I know that what your complaints and everything else is just out of desperation and being upset and being frustrated about not knowing what your future is. He understood that this was not a rebellion against him personally, but that it was really a situation where he had to calm them down. And part of this job of Moshe, I think the main role that he had to play was getting Bnei Israel used to dependence on Hashem, getting them used to the idea that they can rely on Hashem, and that they don't have to always be afraid of what the future is going to be. And that carries through all of the different examples of the water, of the man, and of course of the miracle of crossing over the sea. And that's his job, to encourage and strengthen their belief in Hashem so that one day they will realize that Hashem is their only true source of sustenance. Right now they're saying, Moshe, you're our source of sustenance. Moshe, you're responsible for giving us the food. But Moshe is transferring that to Hashem and teaching them that that's where it comes from. When Bnei Israel sinned, even when they made the egel, the golden calf, Moshe demanded that Hashem have mercy upon them and forgive them. In the pasuk in source number 8, Shmot Lamedet, we're going sort of in a little bit of a survey of a couple of places in Chumash. There's a beautiful drash, I found it in Meshech Chochma, describes the extent of Moshe's identification with Bnei Israel and his devotion to them. In the Torah, we read, I think there might be a mistake in this, it should say Vayachal Moshe. There's a vav missing in front of the pasuk. In source number 8, Vayichal Moshe et pnei Hashem Elohav, Vayomer lama Hashem yichare apcha ve'amecha, asher hotzeta me'eretz Mitzrayim, v'koach gedol uviyad chazaka. Moshe Vayichal did something. We have to figure out what that means. A simple interpretation would probably be prayed or requested from Hashem and said, Hashem, why should you be angry at your people who you took out of Egypt with such miracles? So Moshe's reaction to the egel, of course we know he was angry, and he threw down the luchot, and he broke them, and was very upset. But when Hashem said he was going to punish Bnei Israel very severely, basically he was going to end them, kill them off, and Moshe would be his own nation, Moshe said, I can't deal with this. These people are your people, and Moshe comes and puts his life, possibly his life on the line, and also his power on the line, right? He would have been the patriarch of the entire nation, and dedicates it to Bnei Israel. And there's a very interesting, a beautiful midrash on this. When it says Vayichal, the word Vayichal is a little strange, right? It could mean to pray, but why doesn't it say Vayitchalel or some other word, Vayivakesh, Vayomar? In the Gemara, in the source number 9, the Gemara Masechet Brachot, there is a description of how intense Moshe's tefillah, Moshe's prayer was to help Bnei Israel. Vayichal Moshe et Pnei Hashem, Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Agadol Omer, Melamed She'amad Moshe Batfila, Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ad She'arazto Achilu. This teaches us, Rabbi Eliezer the Great says, this teaches us that Moshe stood praying before Hashem until he was seized by Achilu. And then, of course, the inevitable is to Mai Achilu, what does that word mean? Amar Rabbi Elazar Esh Shel Atzamot. It's sort of a trembling, which is a fire in his bones. Moshe was so fervent in his tefillah for Bnei Israel that there was fire in his bones. So the Midrash, the Meshech Chochma was a much later source, but he quotes a Midrash. What does that mean? What is it trying to say that he had fire in his bones? So he goes back to Gemara, in the Gemara in Bava Batra, that refers to a certain figure in history that would come on later on in Sefer Shoftim. And his name was Yehonatan ben Gershom ben Menasheh. Some of you might have heard of him. He was a priest for idol worship. We can read in source number 10, this is quoting the pasuk from Shoftim Yudchet. It's the story of Pesel Micha, the idol of Micha, where at the time of the Shoftim there was no rule, of proper rule of law in Yisrael. There was no one to supervise if people weren't worshiping Avodah Zarah. And this person named Micha had this idol, and he worshipped it, and other people worshipped it, and he hired a guy who was a Levi to be the Kohen, to be the priest that would help worshipping. And the name of this person, this Levi, was Yehonatan ben Gershom ben Menasheh. And it tells us in the Shoftim that he and his sons continued to be the priests of this Shevet Dan, who were the nation that ended up worshipping this idol. וכי בן מנשה הוא? הלא בן משה הוא. תכתיב בדברי הימים, בני משה גרשום ואליעזר. We know that when it says בני גרשום, בן גרשום בן מנשה, who was גרשום? Moshe's son. Why is it saying גרשום בן מנשה? So the assumption here is that Moshe is really Moshe, But the Navi didn't want to insult Moshe and to hurt Moshe's pride, so it changed it. Right? It says, Ela mitoch she'aseh she'asah ma'aseh Menasheh, tla'o ha'ketuv b'Menasheh. Menasheh was an evil king. So they replaced the name Moshe with Menasheh, who was an evil king anyway, so you're not going to be tarnishing someone's name, even though there was a righteous Menasheh who was the forefather, right? What's really interesting is here is that basically what the Gemara is saying is that Moshe's grandson was an idol worshiper. And he was not only an idol worshiper, but he was a person who was helping people worship idols. And according to the Gemara, there's this whole idea, Midrashic idea, that certain parts of the body come from from one of the parents. And the bones is something that's supposed to come from the father. So when it says Eshel Atzamot, Moshe had fire in his bones, it's expressing this idea that maybe Moshe feels in his bones that there is a possibility, even in him, even in Moshe Rabbeinu, the great tzaddik, there could be a smidgen of something that has to do with, you know, going against God. And he somehow has a feeling, possibly, that, or he knows that his great-grandson will become an idol worshiper. And when he's praying for Bnei Israel, he's praying so fervently because he's trying to say to Hashem, Hashem, these people, it's true, they're terrible. They worship idols and everything, but even me, right? You want to make me into a nation? You want to kill off Bnei Israel and make me into a nation? Well, even me, even my descendants might end up being idol worshippers. That really shows you, this idea really shows you Moshe's greatness of a leader, because he's tying his fate, not only is he tying his fate together with Bnei Israel, but he's a leader that's not self-righteous, and he's willing to point at his flaws and know that even within him, there is that kind of potential for sin, and he's putting his line on for Bnei Israel, his neck on the line for Bnei Israel, realizing that he himself is human. The same thing happens with the Chet HaMeraglim, with the sin of the spies, where Moshe again put his life on the line to help Bnei Israel and daven for them and enable the punishment, instead of being a death punishment of death to all of Bnei Israel, to be reduced to 40 years wandering in the desert. It's a sad ending, though, because Moshe loses his portion in Eretz Yisrael because of his people and their demands, right? Not only Meimer Riva, the time when he hit the rock, but actually that's the main point, the main situation in which is blamed for him not going into the land. And in Zvarim, if you look at the beginning of Sefer Dvarim, Moshe rebukes the Bnei Israel very, very harshly, right? He held it all in until then. But he's really giving it to them and telling them. And he says, Vayit'aber, if you look in Pasuk, in the source of number 11, Dvarim Gan Gimel Kavav, Vayit'aber Hashem bi mema'anchem, velo shamai elai. When Moshe requested from Hashem Ba'etchanan, he said, please, could you let me into Eretz Israel? Why did Hashem not let them go in? Why did Hashem, Vayit'aber in Rashi says means anger? Hashem was angry at Moshe, lema'anchem. Rashi explains that means because of you. Right? Bnei Israel, you are the ones to blame for me not going in. Right? You're the ones who wanted water, you're the ones who were so terrible and didn't enable me to go into the land of Israel. And I'm not going to be able to accomplish my mission. Even though it's very, very clear that Moshe was somehow not meant to go into the land, regardless of Bnei Israel, there's many ideas in the Midrash. For instance, Hashem didn't want Moshe to come into Eretz Israel because he was afraid that he would become a deity, he would become, you know, something that was supernatural. The fact that Yehoshua, right, there's always time, v'zarach Hashemesh uvah Hashemesh, the sun sets and the sun rises, it's always time for a new leadership, and this was time already. But Moshe's deeply pained that he lost his share of Eretz Israel because of the Jewish people, because of these people that he basically gave his whole life for. Baal HaAkedah, Akedat Yitzchak, quoted by Dr. Barna Levy in her article, says that Moshe was chosen because he resembled and emulated Hashem. It says in the Baal HaAkedah, I didn't bring it down here, but it says, Matzalo Hashem ish kilvavo la'asot et ha'ma'asim ha'ele. Hashem found a man after his own heart to do all these things, to act in the fashion that Hashem required from him any time that was necessary. And I think that Moshe emulated Hashem in many ways, but the one that I was emphasizing today and that really is prevalent in all of the sources about Moshe was his compassion for his people and his dedication, which is really an emulation of God. His unconditional advocacy for us is similar to Hashem's unconditional love. And Moshe himself refers to this in one of his last words in if you take a look in Source 12, in Zvarim Perek Zayin. He describes the great love of Hashem for Bnei Yisrael. Lo mirubchem mikol ha'amim chashak Hashem bachem, vayivchar bachem, ki atem ha'me'at mikol ha'amim. Hashem didn't choose you from all the nations because you were such a great nation, because you were such a large nation. Ki me'ahavat Hashem etchem, u'mishamo et ha'shvu'a shel nishba la'avotechem. Because Hashem loved you and wanted to keep the oath that he had sworn to your forefathers to take you out of Egypt. So, even though Moshe's message to us is that even when we anger Hashem, he loves us and will always view us as the beautiful Kala following her Hatan to the unknown place, as we see in Sefer Yirmiyahu. And Moshe Rabbeinu himself, I think in his leadership, tried to emulate that to the best of his possibility, to the best of his ability. And I wanted to end with a quote from the Rambam in Hilchot Tshuva. You can see it's the last source on the sheet. That is a message to us, individuals, right, little people who aren't necessarily big leaders like Moshe Rabbeinu. Al ya'avol b'machshavtecha davar ze she'omrim tipshei umot ha'olam v'rov golmei bnei Yisrael she'akadosh baruch hu guzer al ha'adam mitchilat briyato liyot tzadik o rasha. Don't pay attention to this thing that these idiots say, that Hashem, he mentions the idiots from the other nations and even some from Jewish people, who say that Hashem decides and decrees and determines what a person's nature will be. Mitchilat b'riyato, from the moment they are created to be a good or a bad person, to be a tzaddik or a rasha. Right, Rambam's great important idea of the b'chira chofshit, of free will. Ein hadaval kein, this is not so. Ela kol adam ra'ui lo liyot tzaddik kemoshe Rabbeinu. Any person could be as great a tzaddik as Moshe Rabbeinu. And I think that if we look inside ourselves, if we use this message that I just mentioned, of Moshe being compassionate, and Moshe being caring, and Moshe not giving up, and Moshe looking at the potential and having vision about his fellow man and about his people, we can also emulate Moshe Rabbeinu and be more of a tzaddik just like Moshe. And I hope that we have good things in the field of leadership. We should hear good, everything should be good for everybody in the world and for the Jewish people. And that we should have peace in Eretz Yisrael.